Good evening, everybody. This is Captain Tinsley with Salty Abandoned and the Salty Podcast, where it's always a great day to talk about sailing. This is Salty Podcast number 15. And my guest, I'm very excited about talking to these folks. These guys are circumnavigators. They sailed around the world, took about 2.5 years. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about them, but first let me bring them out. Hello, Dan and Marlene. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yep.
So glad to have you guys. I want to go ahead and play the trailer that I made for you guys because it kind of tells just a little teaser about your circumnavigation. So here it is. It's only 20 seconds, so everybody stay with me. So that shows 115 countries, 911 days, 48,000 nautical miles, 2.5 years. That's just amazing. So we're going to get into your route, which I was fascinated with. But before we get into the route, what got into you guys to want to do something like this?
It was all him.
It was all him.
It was all him.
Well, I've been sailing since my 20s.
Okay.
Started racing small boats, Thistle class, 17-foot small sloop, big dinghy, as well as crewing on big boats all over Lake Ontario out of Rochester, New York, and doing that. And then Marlene and I were married. We bought a Thistle and sailed together for many years while I still crewed. In my early 30s, I read a book a buddy of mine gave me. What was her name again?
Tanya.
Tanya, I've read that book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Where she went around the world when she was 18?
Exactly.
Okay.
What's the name of the book?
Maiden
Voyage.
Yes.
Yep, Maiden Voyage. There's a movie, but the movie's totally different.
There's a documentary of the 14-year-old from the Netherlands or something that's also.
Yeah. So after reading that book, I said, what the heck? If she can do it by herself, I could do it. I didn't want to do it by myself. And so that put the bug in me and took about 15 years to convince Marlene to go along. But we finally got into it and we did it.
Marlene, what made you say yes, finally?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'd follow them anywhere.
I think she said yes when I mentioned, well, if you don't want to go, I'm just going to hitchhike around the world. So she said, okay, I'm going with you.
So he finally just wore you down, basically.
Yeah.
All right, well, I have some preparation questions, like how did you prepare? So I'm just going to throw some words out and you tell me, you know, just in as many words as you want or as few as words as you want. How did you prepare physically?
We didn't. We didn't do anything extra to prepare physically,
no.
Except that. The fact that we've been sailing and sailboat racing for 40, 45 years. So,
yeah.
And we've been on, boats, small boats and big boats. So we didn't do anything special to prepare physically.
No. But even before we left, we were both pretty avid runners.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a big deal.
Yeah. When you show our route, you'll notice we went up to Alaska.
Yeah.
There was a reason for that. The plan was to run the Alaska Marathon.
Oh my gosh.
Because I'm
on a marathon while you're sailing around the world.
Yeah. I'm working on one in every state, and but it got COVID closed, so I didn't run. I ran 26.2 miles on my own when we were up in Genoa.
Yeah, let's put the dates up here. I have the dates here that you were on this circumnavigation, November 30th, 2019 to May 27th, 2022. So during most of that's COVID.
Yeah.
And I read in your Facebook page that you were really planning on having more people kind of maybe make certain legs of the trip with you.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. We had friends and family on the boat pretty much all the way up and to Hawaii.
Okay.
Which was maybe a third of the trip at the most. But from Hawaii on westward, we were by ourselves the whole time.
So that would have been October of 2020.
Yeah.
Okay. So it took you a year to get to Hawaii?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So which did you prefer, by yourselves or?
Oh.
Somebody might be watching, but.
No. It was all good both ways.
Yeah.
You might have been ready to be by yourself at that point, though.
Yeah. No, the guests we had joining us, it worked out really well, very compatible. We were friends with them beforehand, friends and family, and it just worked out very well for the people we had on the boat, and it worked out well with just the two of us. So.
Okay. So, all right. So, some other words here, prep words, sailing experience. You kind of explained that. What about you, Marlene? What was your sailing experience?
Well, I had raced with Dan since
early
80s.
Yeah.
We
okay.
raced together. Yeah.
Guys were pretty prepared.
Yeah, and we chartered a few boats, a few big boats, in the Chesapeake.
Yeah.
I became a sailing instructor for U.S. Sailing as well as American Sailing Association. American Sailing Association. Yeah, ASA, and I got a U.S. Coast Guard captain's license and everything. So a lot of preparation like that went into it over the years.
Sure.
Read a lot of books, watched a lot of podcasts, watched a lot of YouTube
videos.
Yeah. Yeah. Maintenance. I know you were fixing stuff. It's a boat.
Yeah.
On the boat, you're always fixing stuff, and I've been kind of a handy do-it-yourselfer forever. My dad owned a TV and appliance store, and growing up, I'd go down to the shop and work on fixing TVs and wash machines and refrigerators and stuff like that. So I was always I knew enough, I guess, to be dangerous at stuff, you know,
right.
And enough to keep us going. So.
Well, I noticed you were posting things, I believe in the Island Packet, in the Facebook page during your trip. Like you were saying, hey, where do I get this? How do I order that?
Right.
So that you found that it's one of my questions about support. Did you get some support from the Island Packet community?
Oh, you bet. That's the greatest cult, you know, going. It's a really good It's a really good group of people, and they're always willing to help. And, you know, we try to contribute also. Yeah.
Oh, of course. Okay.
Yeah.
Financially.
So we read a bunch about finances and people going around like we did, but I was still very unsure, were very unsure. So we ended up pretty much selling everything before the trip. Took the opportunity to downsize anyway. So we sold our house, we sold one of our cars, we sold one of our racing boats, we had an RV, we sold that. So we pretty much sold everything just so we didn't have any financial responsibilities back home and just lived off what we had in our IRA pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So there was no other insurance to pay for house or just one
Correct.
Car.
Yeah, no other regular bills or anything like that. You know, just wipe the slate clean there.
And obviously you have a house now.
We do. We ended up buying a house when we got back. So and in the end, the whole trip turned out to be less expensive than certainly we expected. Yeah.
Really? And that's because you can fix stuff yourself, right?
That's a part of it, but a lot of once you get away from the United States, things are just less expensive, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of places, just the you go into a marina, it's like half the price that we're paying around here. Food seemed to be less. You know, some places, like you go out to dinner and we have a full dinner, a bottle of wine, and it's, you know, like $50 in some places, you know. So we didn't find it to be, like I said, we found once you get away from the United States, things much less expensive.
We're a bit frugal to begin with. Where you go, if you go to real, real touristy places, food can be $50 for lunch or whatever.
And so we're kind of frugal anyway, so we didn't really.
Right. That's why you could do this.
Yeah.
We really enjoyed finding local farmers markets for fresh produce.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I read the book. I've read a couple of books, like more than one, more than two, more than three. And that's some of the advice that was given is to go and meet the locals. One book said, go eat where the locals eat, because they're not paying $50 for lunch.
Right.
Yep. Go talk to the locals, and you get those locals tips, you know, meaning they tell you where to go and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so you answered the question about the house, the car. How about your family? What did they think about all this?
They thought we were crazy.
They're mixed.
You have kids?
Four
children. They all have their own families and everything. And we got the boat in 2018, and so that was a year and a half or so before we left. And during that time, we invited everyone we could think of, all our family and friends, to go sailing with us around the Chesapeake. And I would say at the end of that, those trips with people, probably 80% of them didn't think we were totally crazy. And
because they saw how nice the boat was.
Yeah. And they felt, you know, like a little more that we would be more secure and everything, and that we could handle it and everything. So, yeah. So that helped a lot. But yeah, there was, you know, like people think, oh, this might be the last time we ever see you, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But, you know, the way you look at it, it's, you're safer out there sailing than you are driving a lot of the highways, and, you know, that we all drive on every day, you know.
Right.
So that's the way I kept explaining that to people, and some of them believed us, some of them didn't.
Let's see. I already covered the IP community, so I'm going to go ahead and pull up the picture. I thought I had that one queued up. Your picture of the route, I appreciate you sending that to me.
Okay.
This really helped me. Okay. I'm getting there. Let's see if I can do this.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll start explaining. We started in the Chesapeake Bay, northern Chesapeake Bay, and headed south to Fort Lauderdale. It was supposed to be our first stop, really. But the weather outside in the Atlantic Ocean was really bad at that time.
Yeah.
So we ended up going the ICW almost all the way down to Fort Lauderdale. We went out in Charleston, and then back in St. Augustine.
Okay.
And stayed in Fort Lauderdale for a bit. And the first real long passage on this trip, although we did take 2-week-long shakedown cruises before.
Okay.
One was out around all the way around Long Island and then back up the Chesapeake. That was an 8-day trip. And another one was just straight out across the Gulf Stream and back from the Chesapeake. And that was another week-long trip. So after those 2 shakedown trips, we felt really confident that we could do it and the boat could do it. So,
okay.
So then we left Fort Lauderdale, and that was a 10-day trip all the way to Panama. We were originally thinking about stopping in Grand Cayman, but weather-wise, it seemed to just make sense to continue on and head all the way to Panama.
And you said, is that the 10 days here?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
Okay. And these are, he's kind enough to put these, how many days for each passage right here.
Those are for the longer passages,
And did you stop in Cuba?
No, but we got really close to it.
And so then you went through the Panama Canal. Did you hang out there for a while?
Yeah, on both sides a little bit. We were in Shelter Bay Marina for more than almost 2 weeks on the Caribbean side. And when we got into the Pacific, we're only there a couple of days. And then, but we did go to one or two different marinas in Panama before we headed up the coast. And then we just bounced up the coast all the way to Alaska. So those are all relatively short bounces all the way up through.
Were they like day trips or?
Yeah, some were day trips. Most of them were overnights, but nothing more than I think 5 days, right? Except from Seattle all the way up to Alaska, was.
Well, first, before we get up to Seattle, tell me about all this, because I've never. Well, I've been to Tijuana, but my boat. But all this right in here, what was that like?
That was pretty good. We had friends of ours joined us in Puerto Vallarta, which is a little south there.
Isn't that about right here?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Two good sailor friends of ours, so we got along really well.
Hang out there. Did you go to marinas or anchor out?
A little bit of both.
It
made sense. We stopped at a nice little island there off the coast of Mexico called
Isla Isabel.
Isla Isabel.
It's in the mouth of the Sea of Cortez.
Okay.
And it's they call it like the Galapagos of Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Really nice vegetation and animal life there.
And the birds,
that was very interesting.
It's an uninhabited island.
Right.
Okay. Sounds very beautiful. Then you went up in here, and now you're up in L.A., or San Diego and L.A.
San Diego and L.A. for a bit.
I think it was the L.A. County wouldn't even let us anchor.
Yeah.
Really?
At one spot.
It was crazy.
Did you stop and go downtown L.A. or anything?
No, we didn't. We spent a lot of time in Newport Beach.
San Diego.
Well, in San Diego. We spent about a week or so in San Diego.
Oh, yeah, Newport Beach.
It was locked down. Was this the lockdown time yet? Or
yeah. You
really could. Oh, that's why you couldn't. Is that why they wouldn't let you anchor?
We don't know why certain towns or communities were very conservative versus others.
Okay.
But if you lived in California, you weren't allowed to take your boat out
at all.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you couldn't go to the beach either. Yep.
Right. Well, we were lucky because we were transiting and we were from the East Coast. They allowed us to just continue on.
I see.
Yep.
So you went up there, and I looked at a map and kind of looked at what all's going on here right here, and we got Seattle where you can come in, like there's you can sail right in there, and then there's all these really cool areas over here by Juneau, all those places.
A lot of nooks and crannies up there. Originally we were planning to go all the way to Anchorage, but again I mentioned the marathon got COVID canceled, so we just spent our time in Southeast Alaska. And we were quite unprepared about what was even there. And Marlene looked up some places and said, "Whoa, what's this Glacier Bay National Park?" She says, "Oh, we can't go there because it's typically a 6-month waiting period to go there." We said, "Well, let's call them up and find out." And they said, "Hey, because of COVID,
no one
was there." So we were able to go in that day, in Alaska. COVID was actually a big advantage because we were able to get into places and really good parking with the boat that we normally couldn't get into because of the normal wait periods of time.
Yeah.
So,
like in June, we parked the boat at the small cruise ship dock.
Right. Because there were cruise ships. So we were luckily we were right downtown. and didn't have to rent a car.
Yeah, everything is walking distance.
Yeah.
So. Well, like in Florida, South Florida got so filled up with boats and really big boats that usually, you know, yachts that usually go to the Caribbean, but they couldn't go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Someone like me was trying to find a slip, like in Fort Myers or Marco Island. But they had the big boats down there. The big boys were taking up all the slips. So that didn't happen, like, because a lot of people went boating. Remember the boats got real expensive during COVID, cars and everything. And so that people didn't go to Alaska on their boats?
No.
They were, yeah, we were, it just worked out very well for us. We went into Glacier Bay National Park and didn't see another boat for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
I have
the place itself.
Queued up a view next to a big glacier. Your boat.
Yeah.
Were you nervous about, you know, pulling a Titanic or something?
Not really. We did hit some small icebergs going in to see
the Leconte Glacier. That made me nervous.
Which was calving. The Leconte Glacier is famous because it's the most southerly glacier that calves into the ocean. And so icebergs are constantly coming away from that glacier.
Big ones.
Yeah. Some, you know, bigger than the boat and as well as a bunch of small ones. So
did you take any kind of precautions for that?
Well,
regular?
No, we're just going slow. We're going into it. What we realized is you want to approach the glaciers. Let me see if I get this right. If you approach them at high tide, that's when the icebergs are kind of going back to the face of the glacier.
Okay.
The tide's coming in. But at low tide, everything drifts away from the face of the glacier. So once we learn that, then all the other glaciers we approach, we always approach them. When it was getting,
like YouTube or something?
We just figured it out after doing the wrong thing at the first glacier.
Okay, did you tap a glacier? I mean, was there like...
I had the dock pole. I was trying to push small ones away.
Little, not glaciers, but little icebergs
that were
floating by us.
Wow.
They recommend don't go within a quarter mile of the face of a glacier.
Well, how close were you in that picture? I wish I had that one.
It's a quarter mile.
You were a quarter mile away? Yeah.
Who took that picture? Were you on your dinghy?
No, there was two other sailboats that we finally did see.
Okay.
And so we were just taking pictures of each other as we went in front of that glacier.
And then emailed them to each other.
Yeah.
That's totally cool.
That was the Marjorie Glacier. We were in front of it for like 4 hours.
Yeah.
And we kind of got the rhythm of things. You would first hear this big crack, sounded like a shotgun, and that was the ice cracking. And then you'd, you know, get your attention, you'd look over at the glacier, and you'd see it falling down.
Yeah.
So.
I bet that did get your attention.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so you hung out up there. Looks like you're there for a while. And then...
We need to tell you the story about the whale hitting us.
Oh, wait. Yeah, let's hear about that.
You want to tell?
No, you can tell.
So we were in Glacier Bay National Park at anchor what's the name of it?
The Reed Glacier.
The Reed Glacier, which doesn't calve, but it has almost like a big, very calm lake in front of it. And there's no wind, no lake, and we were up playing cards and stuff till around midnight. Marlene and I and a friend of ours were with us. And but we went to bed a little after midnight, and all of a sudden we're in bed and the boat rocked. We go, well, wait a minute, what's that? It's very calm. You know, what caused the boat to rock? So we didn't hear any other boats. So we got up and we're looking out the windows, and sure enough, we see a number of whales. It looked like two or three whales splashing behind off the stern, starboard quarter of the boat. It's the whales that one must have been buying would cause some waves, you know. So sure enough, shortly afterwards, so this is the boat, and we saw a whale come. He was probably maybe 15 feet side of us, comes up and spouts, you know, right next to us, a big humpback whale, and goes down. Well, as soon as that whale went down, coming right off his tail, coming right at us, looked like those World War II movies where you see the torpedoes coming at the ships. That's what it looked like, this wave coming right at us. And it just smacked us. Hit the keel really hard. The whole boat shook. Threw Marlene off her balance.
The whale hit your keel?
Yeah, big time. I mean, it was like we ran into a brick wall.
It was more than a 10 degree lift to the boat.
Yeah, it just smacked us really hard. And
are you worried?
Oh yeah, we're
checking everything.
Checking the bilge and nothing coming in. The bilge pump wasn't turning on. Took us about an hour and a half to finally calm down and go back to bed. We made sure we got our stories straight because we know that if you kill a whale up in Glacier Bay National Park, it could be as much of a $500,000 fine. There's a story about that. If you ever visit Glacier Bay National Park, so a cruise ship,
and you could prove
hit a whale,
you were just sitting there. You could prove that. Yeah.
So anyway, we didn't know of any damage until we were heading back down to Washington State, and now we sailed outside into the ocean around Vancouver Island. And typically I check the bilge when we're doing a passage. And the sun was very low on the one evening, and I checked the bilge and I could see light shining into the bilge.
No.
Normally on an island packet, you don't see any light down
no.
there. Well, I could see the sun, rays coming in. I go, holy smokes, it's shining right through the fiberglass. So I knew the whale must have taken a chunk out. Yeah, so we ended up finding a place that would in Anacortes, Washington. They pulled the boat, and sure enough, there was a hole about 7 inches in diameter. Not a hole, a chunk. Took a chunk right out. Luckily, the whale left about two layers of fiberglass. Otherwise, it probably would have sunk the boat. And
the fiberglass is pretty porous, right?
Yeah. But it wasn't leaking at all or anything. They fixed it up really nice. Within 4 or 5 days, we were off and running again. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So, thank God.
Yeah.
There's a book about that, Moby Dick, right?
Yeah. Moby caused a little bit more damage.
Yeah. Sorry, I might have to put the mic on. Just keep talking if you see me do that.
Okay. No problem.
Allergies. I'm always happy when it doesn't hit me while I'm doing a live podcast. Okay, so let's go back to the route. So you came back down to Seattle.
Right. Yep.
And
got
then
the boat fixed, installed a new RAM for the autopilot, and hung out in Seattle for a bit, and then my brother joined us actually. In Anacortes, and he actually sailed all the way to Hawaii with us. So we sailed down the coast, stopping briefly here and there, all the way to Eureka, California, where we provisioned up for our first real ocean passage over to Hawaii, which turned out to be a very fast passage. 13 days is pretty quick from California to Hawaii. We were lucky. There was a northern high up above us for the first half. You could see that little loop. And then that stopped. And then now we're into the typical trade winds, which took us all the way the rest into Maui. And that just it was a very nice and fast passage. Yeah.
So how much motoring did you have to do?
On that?
None.
Maybe...
I don't think we did any.
No, the last, we motored for, well, I guess we didn't have to motor. Our wind generator fell off the boat during that passage.
Oh, no.
And so we motored a little bit, mostly to charge, keep the batteries charged, because the solar panels weren't keeping up. So
okay.
Heck, we got the motor, we got the. So
why did it fall off?
Well,
bad weld.
The post that came with the boat was designed for a lighter wind generator, which was originally on the boat. The previous owners put a heavier wind generator on it, or someone put a heavier wind generator on it.
Okay.
And so the thrashing around in those waves the first week or so, and the support post just rusted away and just kerplunk into the ocean.
Well, I lost one in a hurricane. Did you get
another one? I'm sorry?
You got another one in Hawaii?
Yeah, it was there waiting for us. Friends brought it, who lived in Hawaii, brought it to us, and we had it repaired and fixed pretty quick. Yeah.
Did you do it yourself?
Yeah.
So impressive to me. All right. So where did you go in Hawaii?
You want to go?
Well, we were in Maui for a week and a half, maybe.
Yep.
And then we went to.
We were in Lahaina.
Lahaini. Yeah, we were in Lahaini at the
marina in Hawaii.
Show that burned down.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And then we went to. Honolulu after that. Hawaii had really weird COVID rules. When you arrive in the state, you had to quarantine for 14 days. Well, our passage was 13 and a half, and they said that was close enough. And then we were in Maui, so we wanted to go to Oahu, and they said, okay, you can go to Oahu because you're already here, but if you go anywhere else in Hawaii, you have to quarantine. And if we wanted to leave Oahu and go to another island, we'd have to quarantine again. So it's just really strange rules. So we didn't go very many places.
Yeah. We sailed over to the Big Island and anchored a few nights around the Big Island and then, worked our way back to Oahu. And we stayed quite a bit in the
Waikiki Marina.
The marina right near Waikiki Beach. We were there for quite a while.
Maui, the Big Island, and Oahu. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We didn't.
No Kauai?
No. We would have had to, again, quarantine for another 2 weeks if we wanted to go there. So next step.
And you quarantined how many times?
Well, we were lucky. Anytime we had to quarantine, they considered our passage the quarantine time.
Okay.
So essentially, we never really had to quarantine at all. Yeah.
Well, how many? I've been to Hawaii many times. Kauai is my favorite. Never by boat.
Yeah.
I'm like, how long does it take you to sail from each island to each island?
Oh, less than. They're all day trips.
A couple hours.
Yeah.
It's not that far.
Yeah. They're all day trips.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to be careful with the trade winds coming across, though. The wind between each island can be quite intense.
Okay.
The wind just kind of funnels in between the islands. So you have to, pick a day that wind is either in the right direction that you're going or just has subsided.
So that means big waves?
Yes. Yep. Wind and waves. Yep.
Well,
we were in Hawaii a little longer than expected because we were trying to get a visa or entry approved into French Polynesia.
Okay.
And it took longer, a lot of time to do that. Although hanging out in Hawaii wasn't that bad.
Not too bad.
We were thinking, at one point we were thinking, we'll go back to the States, but then all of a sudden French Polynesia opened up and we're gone, let's go to French Polynesia.
So did you think this is going to be too much trouble during COVID? Did you ever?
At times, yeah. Like that was one of them, hanging out in Hawaii for such a long period of time.
Well, even in French Polynesia, we were there for 4 months.
Right.
And we couldn't go anywhere.
Right.
Nothing was open.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Fiji opened up. So I said, okay, we're going to Fiji.
Yeah. Because everything in the South Pacific was closed essentially, except luckily Fiji opened up. And so we were able to continue our trip. Yeah.
So this is what is right here?
That's French Polynesia.
Yeah, that's the Marquesas.
Okay.
The zigzag is us tacking.
Okay.
That was probably our most undesirable passage from Hawaii to the Marquesas because the wind was pretty much on our nose almost the whole way.
Oh, boy.
And to get there, we did a lot of motor sailing. We used up every bit of fuel that we had on the boat for that passage. We went into Nuka Hiva, which is the island there, with no fuel in the tank at all.
So did you tack like that because you were getting nowhere? Is that what happened?
Yeah. So we knew we had to go east to get to Nuka Hiva. Yeah.
I got you. So okay. So this right here is the island of, say it again.
Yeah, Nuka Hiva.
Okay, and then you headed this way. And where?
Yeah, there's another island. So the first zigzag might be Nuka Hiva. The second one is another island south of Nuka Hiva.
Okay.
Which is Ulupo, I think Ulupo. We went around there too. Yeah, that doesn't really show as much detail as it
did
could.
Did you draw this line? Or is this from your...
Yeah, it's all from the Garmin InReach.
Okay. I haven't, but I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, it's the Garmin InReach track.
So what happened right here?
That is the Tomodos. So we went to a couple of the islands in the Tomodos.
Okay, so this is like an island, and then... And then you went back this way, and...
Yeah. Two or three different islands in the Tomodos we visited, and then we went over to Tahiti from there.
Is that this right here?
No, Tahiti's way back before. Yeah, right there. That's Tahiti.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we crossed over. That's Fiji. All Fiji.
Okay. Yeah. This 19 days. How was that?
That was our slowest passage.
Okay.
we had several days with no wind.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So we
like a placid Pacific Ocean.
Right. Yeah. So it just seemed very slow because we weren't moving very fast during that time.
Did you ever get bored?
Not really.
Nice.
There's always something to do. Yeah. We did a lot of reading books, and we didn't do much fishing or anything like that on the boat. There's always something to do, always maintenance. Always messing with navigation and weather, you know, so.
What kind of stuff did you read?
Oh, Marlene read a lot of, books.
Just books that, like, my niece or a friend of ours were on, that books that they recommended.
Yeah.
Just.
We would download stuff at each port and then read them. We had a bunch of books on the boat, sailing books.
Hmm.
Repair books, I was reading them again.
Most of mine were on my phone.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I like to listen to audiobooks when I'm sailing.
Yeah.
Because it's hard for me to, if it's rough, it's hard for me to read something.
Yeah.
Makes me not feel too good.
on watches, I would listen to podcasts.
Yes.
Yeah.
She would do a lot of podcasts. We also downloaded a lot of movies. We're watching movies. I was watching movies a lot. So.
And so, any problems with getting in the country on any of these, you know, Fiji and?
Once Fiji opened up, there was no problem getting in there.
And when did they open up?
What's that?
When did they open up?
You remember the timing?
Well, we left in April, right? So somewhere around end of March, early April, around March, April of 21.
Right.
They had reopened.
Yeah.
I think so.
Oh, okay.
They had a special program. Some of the marina owners in Fiji knew the people in government, and they realized that anybody coming to Fiji is pretty much already quarantined and safe. That if they're coming by boat, like we took 19 days.
Right.
So they put the program together. They said, okay, you got to prove your, you know, they had to have GPS tracking, and so they monitored us as we were coming across and made sure we weren't stopping anywhere. And they put this program together to give us a special flag, so wherever you were sailing in Fiji, the local people knew that you had already passed their quarantine requirements and everything, and that you had taken COVID testing. Every place we went to, you had to do a COVID test. And so they knew they were relatively safe with us sailors around there. So it was a really good program that they put together in Fiji, and we really enjoyed Fiji. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I think under this program, we were like the third boat to check in.
Right. Yeah.
Under this program.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And
the second boat checked in almost simultaneously with us.
Yeah.
And so then what happens after this right here? What is this one?
So that's Fiji. Yeah.
Oh, that's Fiji. Okay. And then you go to about here?
Yeah. We wanted to go to Australia, but they were totally COVID closed.
Yeah.
And so we went straight across. We crossed the Great Barrier Reef. We anchored a few times in Australia. And then once we left Australian waters, it was 8 days over to Indonesia.
Okay.
Which we had e-visas to go into Indonesia, but they got COVID canceled on our way. And so Indonesia allowed us to anchor in their waters.
All right here?
Yeah. So we anchored a few times and then ended up in Lombok, which is the west, right there.
Okay.
And at Lombok, that's the marina we were had arrangements to go to. They were nice. We had to stay on the boat. We were there just a week. We had to stay on the boat, but they provided provisions. They helped us refuel the boat as well as they did our laundry. And so, although we had to pay for it. Yeah.
Right.
So that worked out well.
So I had talked to some other folks who were able to get fuel brought to the boat or groceries and water and stuff like that. Well, they didn't need water. They had a water. Did you have a water maker?
We did, yeah.
You didn't, yeah, I bet you recommend that.
Yeah, definitely, yeah, for something like this.
Yeah, so you had people bringing you stuff, and when you were in Indonesia, you couldn't leave the boat?
Correct.
Right, we could have, but we heard, we were actually with a buddy boat at that time, and they had some special arrangements because they had a child on board with...
Special needs,
and so they had to get fresh medicine and everything everywhere they went, and they ended up talking to one of the harbor masters there, and the harbor master said, yeah, you can come ashore, but we decided we didn't want to, just because we heard of stories of people's boat getting confiscated in New Zealand and up in Malaysia, and we didn't even want to take that chance, so we stayed on the boat. Yeah.
I hear stories about having to grease the palm and all that, and when you're
you're not very good at that.
did you have to do any of that
no.
to make something? Well, we you might have had to get into it if your boat got confiscated.
Yeah. We didn't have to do any of that. In retrospect, there was a guy in South Africa that we said, I bet you he wanted us to give us a bribe, but we didn't, you know.
Okay. So you didn't have to do any of that? I mean, you can't get in trouble, right? For saying that.
No, we didn't do any of that.
Oh, good.
I mean,
I've heard stories about like they wouldn't let them leave the country. They wouldn't give them a clearance because they just got a resentment towards whoever was on the boat, and
we were very lucky. I mean, there might have been some delays, but it worked out well for us, you know.
Okay.
So
that's good to hear.
Yeah, we didn't.
So after Indonesia, then you hot footed it over here to, is that I'm trying to remember that. This
Reunion
right here.
Island.
What?
Yep.
What is
Reunion Island. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So wherever you are, you try to figure out where you're going to go, and through email, you're getting clearance to places to go.
Who's doing all that?
Pardon me?
Are you doing that, or are you doing that, Dan?
Marlene did most of that.
Yeah, handling the paperwork and getting those clearances. We originally were thinking about stopping in Mauritius, which is a UK territory, but
Where's
we found
that?
Out they're much more expensive than going to La Reunion, which is a French territory.
Yeah.
So we ended up going to La Reunion instead, which worked out very good. It was a good place to go.
Great place to go.
So this is a very long stretch, 20 days.
Yeah,
20 days.
We were both apprehensive about crossing the Indian Ocean because of all the stories we heard and read, and the typhoon season there they can pop up at any time during the year. There isn't necessarily, they're more common
after November
1st, but they can happen at any time of the year. But what the nice part about that trip, there was a southern high off of Australia, and then a low pressure system right about where the equator, and we were right in between the two, and the low followed us with us. And
okay.
So we just flew across on that passage. It was a tremendous passage with the wind behind us almost the whole way. We were averaging, 9-10 knots most of the time, and our hull speed is, around just under right around nine knots. So we're
well, I've always heard that it takes 30 days to get across.
We were planning 35 days.
Yeah.
And it took you 20.
20, yeah. We were planning.
So five days in a row, we averaged over 200 miles a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were just flying.
Because of the wind.
And
that's
just
incredible.
Surfing off the water. We realized early on there was about 15-foot waves, and we realized that we had to keep the boat moving really fast, otherwise the waves was bumping into the back of us.
Yeah.
So.
Oh,
well, we
yeah.
Lower the transom, and it's like, okay, we gotta trim the sails a little, pay more attention to the sails.
So
optimum speed.
We had full sails as much as we could, and the boat responds very well.
Do you know the wave heights?
We figured they're around 15 feet, almost that whole way.
Yeah.
You were looking up at them.
Yeah.
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 Here they come. The back of the stern of the boat. They were coming at the stern.
Yeah.
But
the boat was surfing on them really well.
Right.
So we had a weather router in South Africa who's quite familiar with the Indian Ocean, and he helps a lot of boats coming across. He gets in contact with them, and anybody, you're talking on these forums and you're talking with each other, and you say you contact Des, and he'll help you get across. So you send Des a report every morning of your
that.
Speed.
Well, what kind of communication? Like that was before Starlink, right?
Yeah, so it was email.
We had an Iridium Go device on the boat.
Okay, I have one of those, but I never really got the use of it. But now I have Starlink. It's so much easier.
Right, yeah. With the Iridium Go, you have email. You can get weather reports, which interfaces with Predict Wind.
Right.
You can use it as a satellite phone.
Yeah.
But the connection isn't super.
Yeah.
You can get news reports and stuff. So we took, I think, full advantage of using the Iridium Go.
Okay.
So we'd send them an email and give them our speed, our direction,
GPS
position. And about an hour later, he'd send us back a report saying, okay, here's what's going to happen for the next couple of days. And at the end of his message, it was, I can't remember exactly how he worded it. So I would say, like, smooth sailing ahead or something like that. And it was very refreshing to hear that from him, which corresponded with what we were seeing also based on the weather reports. We're getting updates every 12 hours with the Iridium Go and Predict Wind.
It was really rough and then it smoothed out, or it just continued to go following seas?
Continued almost the whole way, except for the last day. Now, I wouldn't call it really rough at all. It was
okay.
It was following seas, and it was just smooth because we had the boat was keeping up with the waves, and we were just flying,
Okay.
And, it was actually
it's
the
kind
most
of rolling. Was it kind of rolling?
It wasn't that bad. It was was rolling, but I guess now we're about halfway around the world, and we're comfortable with ocean sailing, And so what rolling there was wasn't uncomfortable,
Okay.
We were in a routine. We were sleeping in the salon with Lee Claus, a little bit about way we did
what is
things.
That?
We,
what did you Lee what did you say? You were sleeping with what?
With Lee Claus. So
I don't know.
It's a cloth that you put on your bunk, okay? And
it goes under the it's attached under the cushions in the salon.
Right. and holds up. So it's kind of like you're in a crib, you know?
I see. You know? Okay. Keeps you from falling out.
Keeps you from falling out. Yeah. Lee cloth. And so we always had them that set up. The way we worked our shifts is because we always wanted to have somebody, you know, on watch all the time. So we would typically have dinner together. And then after dinner, Marlene would take over. And we preferred long shifts. So she stayed up and was on watch till around midnight, 12:30. And then I'd get up and take over for the rest of the night until the morning.
Yeah, so, Marlene, that's the shift I would prefer. Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm going to bed. Yeah. But that way we get a good solid, you know, 4 to 6 hours of sleep. And during the day, we might take a nap, you know, we didn't have anything formal during the day.
Right. Well, crossing the Indian Ocean, we didn't see a single boat for 20 days.
Right.
Not even a ship, nothing.
Yeah.
So
wow.
We would set the radar alarm on, the AIS alarm on, and we go
right.
down below and watch a movie.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
We'd poke out once in a while. We had our navigation was mirrored on an iPad, which we had down below.
So yeah.
We could see what if anything
active
was
captain.
Out there. Yeah.
Active captain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So you and I were talking about a little bit about this before we went live. You know, the dangers of Indian Ocean. Is this part as dangerous as this part up here? Is this the Red Sea right here?
The Red Sea. I don't see your cursor.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
There it is. I see it now.
The Red Sea.
Yeah, we just stay far away from that because of the pirates.
But this part is not as dangerous. Is that a true statement?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, because there's nothing there.
Right.
No
yeah, because it's up here that you want to
stay away from. Yeah.
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 And this passage right here. Is
the
it
only
this
way
part?
I would go through there is if you had a U.S. battleship escort.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is where a lot of stuff goes down right here. That's not
yeah.
recommended for folks like us, huh?
Exactly. So everyone who's doing a trip like we did, they're all going around the bottom of South Africa now.
Right. Okay.
No one seems to be going through the Red Sea.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what happens? So does this a stop right here?
Yeah. That's La Reunion Island is right there.
Okay. And this yep. is
Madagascar.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. And
so
then you
went. Yeah. Madagascar was COVID closed, so we didn't stop there. And we went right into
Richards Bay
on the east coast of South Africa.
Okay. And
then there's a number of people that were there. Also boats that were not quarantined, but lockdown way up north, like in the Seychelles. And they all were all of a sudden everyone was coming into Richards Bay all at one time.
Yeah.
So Richards Bay got a little crowded there with visitors.
Yeah, actually Richards Bay was the first time we saw other American boats.
Yeah.
Since we left California.
Since we left
Hawaii.
Oh
yeah. Wow. So yeah. So where like different countries, just all different countries were represented?
Yeah, mostly
exactly.
Europeans.
Yeah. European.
And okay. From Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, but some American boats, including a boat, the people are from Toledo.
Oh, really?
Who just finished their 13-year circumnavigation.
Yeah, like this week or last
yeah.
week, they just finished it.
Yeah, they're slow folks. We were on a fast track. they really took their time. They would stop places. Like we were in South Africa where we met them. We were there for, what, 8 weeks or so. Well, they stayed more than a year in South Africa.
Yeah.
So,
wow, 8 weeks is a long time, though.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
So we had time. Our original plan was to celebrate New Year's in Cape Town.
Okay.
And we did.
Oh, yeah. Well.
New Year's 2022, right?
2022
yeah.
New Year's in Cape Town.
So
yeah.
You made your way around here, and then what's going on right here in these two?
So a little bit before going around, so. There's a really quite a bit of current at the bottom of South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Called the Argolis Current. And Most of it, and it's kind of like the opposite of what the Gulf Stream does.
But a little stronger.
Yeah. And so you have to watch out. If the wind's coming out of the west, then it's butting against the current, and of course you get big, big waves. But if the wind's behind you coming out of the east, then you just try to hightail it as far as you can.
You're talking most about this area right here, right?
Yeah, most of the time the wind switches back and forth about once every 3 days.
Okay.
So you go from port to port about, you're maybe able to go out about 3 days. We were very, very lucky. We left East London and got out in that current, and we're scooting around, and we kept checking the weather, Des was giving us reports and stuff, and we just kept on going all the way to Cape Town.
Where's Cape Town?
Right at the western tip of South Africa, a little bit further south of that, right there.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we got to Cape Town very, very easily compared to the way a lot of people say how treacherous it is going around the bottom of South Africa.
Yeah.
We just had the perfect weather window. Yeah. You
know. Just got to wait for the weather.
Yeah. So we hung out in South Africa for quite a bit. We did some safaris and wine tours and had a great time in South Africa.
Okay. And right here, is that where you were hanging out for?
Yeah.
So, and what is this right here?
That's the country of Namibia.
Yeah. We ended up taking the GPS unit. We rented a car.
I was wondering. That's a long river you went up.
Yeah. We rented the car, and we had the unit with us when we were in the car.
You're driving through deserts, and you don't see cars for days.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
how long were you in Africa?
Pardon me?
How long were you in Africa? Was it total?
We arrived Halloween of
2021.
And left.
Around February 1st.
Yeah, left Namibia.
Around February 1st. Yeah.
Okay. And then you started.
Then we went to St. Helena.
St. Helena
is an island like there in the middle of the Atlantic.
It's a British territory.
Yep.
Is this it right here?
Yeah, you're probably, we don't see the map right now.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
This right here?
Yeah.
Right here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's that little one there.
That's where Napoleon was exiled.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So we spent, I don't know, a little over a week or so there.
Did you go see where he was exiled?
Yeah.
That and a lot of other stuff there. It's a nice island to visit. Had a good time there.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we're going to switch over. Well, so then you started we're going to South America. Is that what happened?
We went to Brazil.
Yeah, that 12-day passage is over to Brazil.
Okay, let me see if I can switch over here.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, it'd be way over.
Yeah, so we stopped at an island off the coast of Brazil called Fernando de Noronha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is probably at the very left, or rather the right side of the screen there. It's
right
quite
here.
Ways offshore.
It's about 200 miles.
Yeah.
Over here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fernando de Noronha, which was a nice island, great beaches that are there. And but Brazil mainland was closed, but they allowed visitors like us to go to Fernando de Noronha.
Wow. So you're starting to think, hey, I'm back in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah. Yep.
How did that feel?
We said, we're getting close. We're getting a little itchy to maybe head back home. So.
Yeah. Right.
So that next passage is up to Barbados.
Yeah. Well, we are with several boats there in Fernando de Noronha.
Yeah.
And we all left around the same time, but they all went to Grenada.
Right.
And yeah. We want to go to Barbados.
Yeah.
Because we like Moke rum.
Okay. And what time of year was this now? This was March
before February?
Yeah, around February.
February, March?
Yeah.
Okay.
February, maybe early March. Yep.
Yeah.
So you're about to cross into the hurricane zone here right before, but you still had time.
Yeah.
Right. Our, we wanted to be out of the Caribbean before hurricane season started.
Right.
That was another passage, that 10 days, that again was very fast because there was another big current stream there called the ABC? NBC.
North Brazilian Current.
North Brazilian Current.
Okay.
And that's where we logged another 7 days in a row over 200 miles per day.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. Some folks, people we talk to say they've never done 200 miles in a day. And here we did 7 in a row on that because we got ourselves in the current. There was virtually no doldrums crossing the equator, and that was a great fast passage up to Barbados.
Is this that looks like is that?
That's Puerto Rico that you're looking at. We went near Puerto Rico, but we stopped in
St. Thomas.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Correct. Yep. St. Thomas, and then from St. Thomas. I didn't write the number there, all the way to
Fort Lauderdale.
You didn't stop?
No, that's nonstop all the way to Fort Lauderdale. That was about 5 or 6 days.
So by this time, Florida's open, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Well, even Florida, St. Thomas was pretty open.
Yeah, St. Thomas was quite open. Florida kind of never really closed.
It was pretty brief and
right.
Non-existent. Yeah. Okay, so you're back in Florida. Where'd you stay?
At my cousin's house.
Marina was.
A friend of my brother's was rebuilding a house.
On a canal.
And he just finished his dock. And he said, well, the dock's empty. Why don't you come and use the dock? So,
you guys are so lucky. So
we were calling all over marinas, and they were all
like Florida. It's so hard to find marinas.
They were cool.
All like $300 a night, you know, all these places. We were looking, calling places where we could anchor, and they said, well, you can anchor there, but there's no place where you can take your dinghy and leave it, you know, overnight, you know. So then, luckily, my brother had this friend who was working on the house, and it just worked out great.
Yeah.
And this was 2022.
Yeah.
22.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was probably like
April. Yeah.
And the Caribbean was open by then?
Yeah.
For the most part, yeah.
All the big boats were able to get out of there and go to the Caribbean if they wanted. Okay.
Yeah.
So how long were you in Fort Lauderdale at your cousin, brother? What was it?
Your cousin.
How long did you hang out?
About a week.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe a little less than a week. And
any culture shock?
A little bit, yeah. Back into reality, you know.
Yeah.
Our kids were telling us about coming, you know, returning home. And we were kind of like, gee, we didn't want to go back up north because it was still cold up there. So we set a date. We said, okay, we'll arrive on Friday of Memorial Day weekend. Back in the same room.
How does that look like Memorial Day weekend? May 27th?
Yeah. It was Friday of Memorial Day weekend. I said, we'll arrive at the marina at 11 o'clock.
Says nobody on a boat trip. How many?
we took an entire month to travel up to ICW.
Yeah.
And did you have fun?
We did. We visited every person we could think of who lived between Florida and Maryland.
Right.
To try to slow it down so you could get there.
Taking our time. In fact, the night before we were to arrive, we parked our boat across the bay from our marina. Like, we could have gone in like 2 days earlier, but no, the kids are throwing a party. We got to show up at this time.
Did they know you were out there?
They figured they were.
They figured we were somewhere, but they didn't know.
They didn't know exactly where we were.
Well, they didn't have your inReach link.
Yeah, I just take that back. My one son knew exactly where we were.
Oh, okay.
In fact,
Is his name Luke?
Luke and Ben, yep.
Yeah.
Okay, I saw I'm going to show the video that Luke took of you when you came in. But, so.
We were right up by where Francis Scott Key Bridge is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
We were there, yep.
That's home.
Well, we're across the bay from there.
Tolchester
is across the bay from there.
Yeah.
So you don't live in Philadelphia?
We do.
But the boat is in Maryland.
Oh, even now?
Yeah.
You're so far from your boat.
It's 2 hours.
2 hour drive.
Okay. Yeah. I forget everything's kind of close. I drove through there and we went through like 5 states in an hour or something. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I might have driven across that bridge. Okay. So let me see if I can. Okay. This right here. Let me get this queued up. I'm getting a spam call. Okay. You wrote a book, Marlene.
I wrote a book.
Yep.
All right. I ordered the book.
Oh, cool.
Thank you.
Yep.
I was sad I couldn't get it, you know, like a audiobook or something. I think y'all should do an audiobook. But I ordered.
Well, it's full of photographs. That's hard to do an audiobook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We made very, very little money on the books, by the way.
Well, we'll try to increase your sales here.
It all goes to,
Barnes & Noble.
It all goes to Barnes & Noble.
Well, are you going to put it on Amazon?
No, because
they don't like the format.
I wanted a landscape hardcover book, and you can't self-publish that on Amazon, that format.
Okay.
So that's why it's on Barnes & Noble.
Everybody ordered the book, and I did look for it on Amazon.
We had a grandchild that was born while we were away. And she was 2 years old the first time we met her. Oh. And so this was inspired by her.
I think I read that.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Everybody order the book at Barnes & Noble. I have to cough again. What a nightmare on a live podcast. I do have a few more questions. What do you think is important to say to people that are considering this that we haven't covered here?
Just make sure your boat-wise, make sure your autopilot is working very well and have a complete enclosure of the cockpit. That made things very comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, cold and mostly for cold.
Yes, even at night.
Even keeping waves out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would be the big advice?
Boat wise. Yeah.
What about mentally?
What you're saying is like you're never fully prepared.
That's true. Yeah. You'll never. You can't be too prepared for this. I mean. We had a plan, but we had to be very flexible, you know, with the plan based on weather and everything else. We were not, I kept saying during the trip, I'd say, by the time we get back, we'll be ready to leave. And the boat will be ready to leave, you know.
Yeah.
So you just got to, you know, say, okay, we're close enough. Let's just go for it, you know.
Yeah.
And I relate that to the one time I went skydiving. I'm up in the plane looking down and ready to jump out the plane. And I said, well, I got five. I know I'm going to have at least 5 minutes to enjoy. So let's just go for it, you know. And that's what we did. You know?
Is it really 5 minutes?
Yeah. When you're skydiving.
Yeah.
You're free falling for about a minute and a half. And the rest is then he pops the chute. And then you're floating down the rest of the way. Yeah.
So. You guys are crazy.
Yeah.
My kind of folks.
Yeah.
So, that's what I would recommend. So if you You just have to prepare and they never go. I mean, even for short cruises, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, we did some other things to prepare. Like,
yeah.
We had...
I can barely hear Marlene.
Oh, sorry.
Can you speak up?
Sure. Like, some things we did to prepare. Like I bought possum pans that were induction and then I bought an induction hot plate in case we were to run out of fuel, we could at least have an electric hot plate to cook food. We brought a sewing machine on the boat, and as it turns out, I had to repair every single sail that was on that boat at least once, if not more.
Gosh.
And things like I learned how to bake bread on the boat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you lose weight?
Pardon me?
Did you lose weight?
Pretty much stayed the same.
Yeah, it's about the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. We ate well.
There was backup. The other advice is to have backups. You know.
Backups for a lot of things.
So, like, if the batteries went dead, we had solar panels that, you know, could recharge it. But not only that, we didn't have a big generator on the boat, but I brought along a little Honda generator. And in addition to that, I brought along one of those battery car chargers, like if your battery in your car goes dead.
Yeah.
So you had backup of a backup. So. Yeah.
And sometimes I think you just have to be creative. Like off the coast of Brazil, our Genoa exploded. And so we pulled that down and we have the Hoyt boom on the staysail and the fitting on the end of that broke. So we couldn't use the staysail, but we're like, hey, why don't we take the staysail sheets and run them through the jib track? So
yeah.
The staysail was now our jib. So you just kind of, sometimes you got to think outside the box and figure out what works, what's going to work.
Yeah, because if it's shooting, something's going to break.
Yeah.
You have to think, you have to be creative. Like, what on this boat could I rig that?
Yeah.
With something lying around in the boat, you do a lot of that.
The funny thing was our radar stopped working because the belt broke inside, and it's just a rubber belt.
Right.
And it broke. So I had all these. So we had a hot knife on the boat for cutting some umbrellas we needed to repair, and so Dan melted the belt together using the hot knife, and then
he
struck a electrical fitting over it. And it worked great after that. So, you know, just got to figure things out.
Yeah.
Did you write all this stuff down?
I think it's all on the blog, yeah.
Oh, it's on the blog.
If anyone searches for just Sailing Trance, they'll find the blog. And,
there's an entry for every day of the journey.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So I read a little bit of it. Okay, here's a big question. I got a few more, and then I'm going to let you go. In what ways did the trip change you? That's a deep one.
I feel more fulfilled, you know.
I think little things aren't important. Some things just aren't important anymore. You know, like you have knickknacks around the house. It's like, or you see something that's cute and you want to decorate the house. It's like, why? Like it's more minimalist now than it was before. That type of,
I read a book about someone being gone for 2 years and they had put everything in storage and rented their house out. They came back after 2 years, opened up the storage, and it's like, we don't need any of this.
Right. I think we got rid of about half the stuff we had in the storage unit.
Yeah, we did have a storage unit, and a lot of it's gone.
Do you find yourself starting to stock up again on stuff?
No, not really.
We're pretty good about it. This house is smaller. We did downsize. There's no basement, no attic.
No second floor.
So there's not bedrooms. A whole lot of storage, and we're both very conscious. You know, like during the trip, we didn't buy a whole lot of souvenirs and knickknacks and stuff because we didn't want to clutter the boat up so much. Now we did get some stuff, but just not a whole lot, you know. So we're
like
pretty good about
and stuff like that. That's
stuff you could use. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're so far we haven't cluttered up the house too much, so we're keeping it good.
Key West John, who is somebody I talk about a lot in my videos, he helps me. He's my weather advisor. He wanted to know the longest stretch of sail with no land in sight.
That was the Indian Ocean. Yeah.
Okay. That was the 20 days?
20 days. It was actually, well, 20 and a half.
Yeah.
That was the longest stretch with no land in sight.
And we got a question here finally from the people that are watching the live stream. This is Jay Anderson says, great job, guys. Did you carry a drouge anchor for bad weather?
A drouge, yeah. We had one on the boat. It came with the boat and we bought it. If you'd like to buy it, it's for sale.
It's a parachute anchor.
Oh, okay.
It's not really a drogue. It's a parachute anchor.
Yeah.
A drogue, you kind of have it behind you and you're still going in that direction. The parachute anchor, you throw off the bow and keep the bow into the wind.
Yeah.
So it's not really a drogue.
Yeah.
Okay.
We didn't have a drogue anchor. We had a parachute anchor on the boat.
Right. But we didn't use it.
If I wanted to rig up a drogue, I would have thrown out like some anchors and stuff for t-shirts or whatever out the back. But we didn't. He'd be interested in this. The most wind we experienced on our trip was 35 knots of wind.
Oh, that's okay.
It's nothing compared to what most people experience on a trip like this.
Right.
Most people at least hit 40, 50, 60 knots. And
gosh.
We were just very lucky as well as,
patient.
You know, patient weather-wise and didn't hit any, you know, bad storms or anything like that. So we were very lucky.
Yeah. But if you'd like a parachute anchor, just give us a call.
Yeah. Okay, the question, Jay Anderson, thank you. And ask another one. Anybody else watching can ask a question. I noticed that you, when you made that presentation to that travel group that had been to 100 plus countries, you said that you thought that you might be, they might be like, oh, done that, seen that, but you were pleasantly surprised that they were impressed with your trip.
Yeah, and
why do you think that is? Because what? Why do you think that they were? Why do you think they felt that way? Because it could have gone that way, but maybe it's because they hadn't done it by boat.
I think that was the thing. They hadn't done it by boat, and during COVID, they were pretty much locked down. And here we were able to travel during that time and understanding, you know, how we got, you know, how we worked. We didn't abuse the system, how we had to work the system to do what we did, you know, during COVID.
Yeah.
Like you just said, we were very pleasantly surprised. They appreciated that talk.
I thought that was a cool comment. Okay, so now I'm going to show the video of you. Let's see if I can do this. There it is. Hopefully you can see it. And here it is. You hadn't even put your feet on the ground yet, had you?
Yeah.
Popping champagne.
And Luke, your son, he's the one that took that video.
Yeah. We had that flag.
All right, so I'll put that down now.
We had the courtesy flags from all the countries we visited. Flying.
Oh, that was.
Yeah.
You had them all on there. I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
You only saw the bottom few.
Oh, okay. Let's see. One more question. Oh.
Sure.
Okay. Wait. Jay Anderson. I'm good without the anchor. I've got an IP44 and a circumnavigation. Maybe a bit ambition for us. What do you say to that?
Well, to each his own.
yeah.
We would certainly not poo-poo anybody who wanted to do a circumnavigation. Now, you can do it very safely with a group of people on these, what do you call them?
The ark.
On the arks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Although, the problem with that is their time frame is very tight. I mean, they do them in like 18 months, which is very fast.
It's very pricey.
But it's pricey and a safe way to do it because you're going with the flotilla. And
and why is it pricey?
Because people make money on it.
Yeah.
It's a group out of the United Kingdom that arrange all the different ports where these people go to.
Yeah.
Okay.
You give them your passports. They take care of all the ins and outs of going to different places, and they manage the whole trip for you.
Okay.
And then you just have to.
It's like having a travel agent or something. Old,
exactly.
Old fashioned travel agents.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. One more question. What would you do differently?
I don't know of anything we'd do differently. You know,
I love it.
Maybe take a little bit longer.
No more.
Yeah.
When we first, Marlene committed to say, okay, we can do it. We'll do 2 years. Okay. But then looking at the fact that we wanted to go to Alaska and the weather seasons, you know, you have to avoid the hurricane season, you have to avoid the typhoon seasons, that it had to be 2.5 years. So that was the minimum we could do it in order to go to Anchorage, Alaska.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So the only thing that we might do different is maybe take our time and maybe travel back home periodically. You know, we felt at the time we didn't want to leave the boat anywhere for an extended period of time while we traveled back home. So
you didn't leave at all?
No.
No, we pretty much stayed with the boat the whole time, except for some land trips like you saw in Namibia where we rented a car for a week or something like that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, where can people find you? Sailing Trance on Facebook?
Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah. Instagram?
And the blog, sailingtrance.com.
Yeah.
And a post a day, at least one post a day. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's what she was doing. Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys.
And, the email, you can email us at sailingtrance@gmail.com. You know, we're more than happy to help and answer anything.
Advice?
Yep. And anybody sailing or up in the northern Chesapeake Bay, you know, let us know. So.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for doing this. This is a little bit longer than normal, but I just wanted to get it all in. I mean, we could have kept talking for 10 hours, but I had some specific questions I wanted to cover. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We enjoyed talking about it. Yeah.
I really appreciate it. And if you're going to take another trip, I hope you'll come back on here and talk about it. Maybe even.
We're thinking Nova Scotia, not next summer, but the summer afterwards.
25.
I never understand people going north to colder weather. But it is going to be in the summer, right?
I have family.
She has relatives up there, so we're going to visit relatives and friends.
Any plans for the Caribbean?
Yeah, definitely the Caribbean. Yeah.
Okay.
In future years, yep.
All right, I wanted to know about that, so in the future. Yeah. So thank you so much, guys. Great to meet you.
Yeah, thanks.
Hope to see you at an Island Packet roundup or something soon, maybe at the factory. They're talking about doing one June 15th or something.
Is it June? I thought
they changed it.
Oh, they changed it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can make it then.
Yeah, I talked to Leslie, and she's going to be on the podcast. Leslie from the factory.
Yep.
So she said, "Oh, you got to come down." So I'm going to definitely try to be there. So, and we'll try to get the word out. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you. Bye bye.